can be romantic when I'm starving for sleep. When I try, but I can't seem to remember anything from the latest episode of Columbia House Party. Jake, what's up, man?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm all right. It's very warm in my apartment right now, which is...
It's quite warm in mine as well. I should have...
Yeah, it's a weird post-workout slash today was my first day being allowed to go outside in a while. So my temperature's all over the place today. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm like... Should I turn the air on? But then I feel like a weirdo turning the air on in January.
Yeah. You could just crack a window, I guess.
I guess that's true. But then it'll be
Will Rue try to get out the window?
No, but like our only windows are like balcony doors. But I feel like it'll just be noisy and ruin our great show.
That makes sense. Yeah. So instead of Rue ruining it or the noise ruining it, why don't we ruin it? Is Rue short for ruiner, by the way? Is that a...
No, it's short for Rufus.
Oh, that's even better. And not Rufio either. Damn.
No, so sadly many... not Rufio. But maybe it's Rufio now, but named after the band, not the character from the movie.
Yes, of course. Named after the former topic of a Columbia House Party single. Rest in peace. Jake, I like, I think I didn't, I'm not happy with the way I did the intro today, but the I can be romantic when I'm starving for sleep is among my favorite opening lyrics that we've used so far.
I was hoping that you would do it in the falsetto, but
no, I cannot do that. And I will not subject people to that. I recently subjected people to me doing ASMR. I don't think they also need to hear me doing a falsetto and failing. You know how iPhones have that like headphone safety option where if the noise is too bad, it'll block it out or minimize it for you. I feel like that's what we'd be working with.
That's fair. It is a tough falsetto to hit, I would say.
Well, you could probably hit it. You have much more range on your singing.
I think I would. I was able to hit it when I was younger, but my voice has been ruined by life, so my range is much lower than it used to be.
That's okay. I don't know if the musical theater opportunity is coming through at any point.
Yeah, I feel like I'm probably safe for at least a year.
Yeah, you're okay for right now. Just drink some tea and throw some tea on it. You'll be fine. Guys, this is the latest episode of Columbia House Party. It is episode number 63. Thanks for staying along with us this whole time. Or welcome if you're new. And a special welcome to any of our Patreon supporters over at patreon.com/Columbia House Party. Go join those people. Join us in the Discord. Or at the very least, please rate, review, subscribe. All that good stuff that makes Jake feel good the once a month I give him the updates on the numbers and things like that. Jake, that opening lyric, I can be romantic when I'm starving for sleep. First of all, great line, great snapshot of my general vibe lately where I've been having a lot of trouble sleeping and I've, coming off of isolation and quarantine and just not in the sharpest of places. I feel it and it's a good... It's a good introduction to my vibe with today's band where, no, I can't do the falsetto and maybe don't appreciate the falsetto quite as much as some other fans of this band, but I do love the songwriting here. So Jake, last week we dove into Linkin Park, a band defined in part by their wide array of influences and in part by their openness and vulnerability. So what better transition then to another pretty emotional group and one Mike Shinoda liked enough to do a mix of one of their songs for a remix EP of today's album. Jake, what do you got for us?
So we've kind of done the last few episodes. They've been bigger albums. They've been people's first albums. But really, they've been kind of choices of other people, which is fine. Of our guests, we cede to them. They're great guests. But I think we're going to start a little arc here that I'm going to call the selfish arc of albums that are for us. And so this week we're doing an album that is just for me, even though I think a lot of people like it and it did quite well. But as soon as we were like, what should we do after Linkin Park? I was like, well, I have an idea and I'll like it, but I don't know about the rest of you. So today we're doing a Jake album. We'll get into this a little more in reception, but this was my favorite album of 2018. And today we are talking about Foxing's Nearer My God.
I'll be your dog. I'd be
This is not what I would have expected. I expected we would do Foxing at some point. I was a little curious which Foxing album you'd want to do of the three of theirs. And I would not have expected at the outset of this podcast that when we first dabbled with newer albums, Foxing would be the second most recent of the 63 albums that we've done so
far. Yeah, that's a good point. I think to your first point, could have picked any of the three, I think. But I think because they're a band that maybe aren't as historically rich as some of the others we've talked about, just because, as you said, they are a newer band, doing the most recent makes the most sense. Because just frankly, it gives me more material to research. So that was helpful for me.
Well, plus too, I mean, I think, and obviously we'll get into this, I think there are some interesting tweaks to their sound as they go along. And like, you know, they're very much one of those bands that I feel like the first 10 episodes of this podcast, it came up in every episode where we kind of like rolled our eyes at that emo tree from the emo subreddit. Well, you trace Foxing across these three albums and you might hit six or seven different branches on that tree, depending on your perspective on what genre they are. So I don't have a lot of connection here. Foxing is one of those bands that, you know, you look at the other bands that I listen to and you look at the other people I share tastes with, and you would think that they'd be one of my favorites just based on that, you know, recommend if I like kind of analysis. And I do, like I said, really like the songwriting, really like the lyricism. And I wouldn't say that I dislike them, but it's more just a passive appreciation than fandom. This is not, you know, that it was your favorite album of 2018. I think it was pretty low down on my list. Don't think it cracked my decade list, but all three of their albums are definitely albums that I listen to. And you know, going back to it these last couple of days, like, man, there are a lot of desolate winter Instagram captions on this album, which you know, now I can go Hotel Year for the autumn, and I can go to Foxing for the winter time. So I'm a big fan of the songwriting here, if not necessarily a huge fan of the band in general. Where I was going with that is the other thing I'm interested to trace toward the end is, you know, like I said, there are a lot of bands in their sphere that I really like that mm-hmm. we'll talk about, and some bands that they've toured with when they were coming up, and it makes a lot of sense. And for whatever reason, Foxing haven't clicked for me quite as much as those bands. It's similar to, I think, not to get bogged down in just the names of bands, but it's similar to Fleet Foxes, I think, where everyone else who likes the music that I like really likes Fleet Foxes, and I like the songwriting, but I just can't get there with the music. Anyway, I'm rambling and spending 2 minutes at the top about how I find this album to be good, not great, which is not the spirit of this podcast. I just am trying to set up why Jake is going to carry so much of this, because Jake cares very deeply about Nearer My God.
Yeah, they're a band that snuck up on me, I guess, in a way. I got into them around the release of their second album, Dealer. I actually don't remember how I got into it. I think it might have been a Twitter band that, like, as we've talked before, like, people whose music taste I like mentioned them. And I was like, oh, I'll check that out. And, like, upon first listen, it didn't, like, I liked it, but it didn't really hit for me. Like, I think it was on my 2015 list, it was like an honorable mention. Even like barely made the list. And then it just kind of stuck with me. And I kept going back to it without, like, whenever I was kind of like wandering around going somewhere in Toronto, it was like, what do I want to listen to? It's like, oh, I guess I'll listen to that Foxing record again. Also helped that at the time I wasn't in my favorite place personally. And Dealer is a great sad album to sort of commiserate with. And yeah, they kind of stuck with me. And then I got really into them over the next couple of years, listening to the first two records, and kind of had this feeling to myself that they were going to do something insane with the next one. And then they put out Nearer My God, and I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of not what I was expecting. And then they've just slowly turned into one of my like six or seven favorite bands now. And I've just become a huge fan of theirs. And I'm just always into whatever they're going to do.
Yeah, it's fun to have favorite bands that you like and get really excited for. Shocker. And this is the one benefit of I think, getting to throw the odd recent album into the mix. You know, obviously we did Phoebe Bridgers' Punisher, which Phoebe Bridgers is one of my favorite artists, and that was my favorite album of 2020. And I thought it was cool to, you know, especially in a segment or coming off of having done a lot of early 2000s albums in the weeks before that, it was a good change of pace. And then I think, you know, we did Lorde, who's 2017 and, you know, popped a huge number for us because of Spotify's algorithm, which was nice. but it's just nice to, I like when we jump around timelines a little bit, both because I think it gives a good, you know, it helps kind of paint the picture of, I guess, the three eras of music we're dealing with, the like before we listen to music groups that influenced our bands, the bands we come up on and the bands we like now. And then I do think that it's just, you know, it's a different style of episode and it's a different style of preparation for the episode. It's a different style of fandom when it's a current band who's three albums in and, you know, we can not only talk about what they did on this last album, but what might be next. And it's not quite as much a novelty in the way that, oh, what is Green Day's next album going to sound like? Or what's Fall Out Boy's next album going to sound like? You know, still very successful bands that do stadium rock well, but there's more curiosity with a band like Foxing, who are very much, it feels like, on the edge of being, you know, a more well-known band, I think. We are going to talk about their formation. We're going to talk about their evolution through Dealer when Jake came on board and into Nearer My God, the album we're talking about today. All that and a bunch more after this. All right, Jake, give us the background on Foxing. The only thing that I am aware of, or sorry, I shouldn't say that. I obviously prepped for this episode and read through your notes. But if I'm playing the character of guy you're explaining this to, the only thing I was really aware of pre-Dealer with Foxing is that Modern Baseball did a tour that they were on, and that tour didn't come to Toronto. And at the time, I was upset that Modern Baseball were not coming to Toronto as part of their tour. I don't believe I had any concept of who Foxing were at that point. I think this is 2013 or 2014. Anyway, hit us, man. Give us the fill us in on Foxing.
So Foxing formed in 2011 following the dissolution of the group Hunter Gatherer, which was a post-rock band that featured Josh Cole, John Helwig, and Matthew Piva. They were joined by Connor Murphy of the band Family Might on vocals and Ben Hellman of Eagle Scout on guitar. By fall of 2011, Ben Hellman had left the group and Jim Fitzpatrick took his place. This was a common theme for the early days of Foxing. They briefly considered calling themselves She Hums in Swarms, but eventually settled on Foxing, which I am very glad that they did, because I definitely would not have listened to a band called She Hums in Swarms. In January 2012, they recorded their first batch of songs called the Old Songs EP. Following this, Piva and Fitzpatrick left the group, and they were replaced by Samuel Nauman and Ricky Sampson. Nauman would leave shortly after this and was replaced by Thomas Peeney, who was also in Family Might with Connor Murphy. The Old Songs EP was released in August of 2012, and following that, in February of 2013, they released split EPs with Send Away Stranger and Japanese Breakfast. Peeney then left the group and was replaced by Eric Hudson, also formerly of Family Might. And in 2013, Foxing embarked on their first tour of the Midwest, and on the final night of that tour, they were signed to Count Your Lucky Stars Records. After signing the label, they went into the studio to record their debut album, The Albatross, which was released in November of 2013. I don't know if you can call this song a hit, or if it's just a song that's very popular in like the new emo world, for lack of a better term. The song was on, I think it's the third track on the Albatross. Ian Cohen ranked this as the 69th greatest emo song of all time on a Vulture list that maybe we'll talk about one day. And that song is called Rory. Rupture.
best friend is setting it, but took to the sea before you could have read it. A tree in a snow-capped water of the unknown, extracting my heart while it was still beating, but glowing in red, in arms where the sweat would envelop your arms if you broke down and held it. I swear.
That's a good create the soundscape kind of intro, eh?
truly is.
The opening credits of a thriller movie that takes place in a rural town.
Yeah, that first record is really like soundtracky.
Yeah.
I think. Not amped.
Which is good. Hey. They're doing the backwards Reznor. Starting with the soundtrack stuff and then going into good albums instead of the opposite. It was that movie Soul, I think, that Reznor does some of the soundtrack work on, I think. I came across something else. I don't know. I came across something else that I didn't realize he had done. He did the music, him and Atticus Ross.
Oh, no way.
Did the music for Soul. So
what don't cool.
That was a fun little movie.
Now. Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but I do want. I would like to check it out.
Easy stream, buddy. All right, post Rory, post the Albatross. The Albatross, clearly these guys are just huge golf fans.
Boo. Ian Cohen wrote of Rory in that Vulture article. He said, as with most young artists, Foxing's lofty, arty ambitions uncomfortably coexisted with the ugly teenage angst that inspired their earliest lyrics. And judging from the hallowed stature of Rory in their catalog, it's clear what won out in the beginning. The narrator of Rory is poisonously entitled Envious and Self-Loathing, a dangerous mix in a genre where fans often don't assume poetic license. These are also wholly relatable and valid feelings that no amount of do-better discourse will strike from the human experience. Anyone who's felt that way can look back in disgust. Foxing have admitted they kind of hate Rory, but there's no denying its potency in the moment. They still use it to close out nearly every show. So following the release and semi-success in the scene, as the kids call it, of The Albatross, it did not chart, but was released to very strong reviews. The band signed to Triple Crown Records in 2014, who then released a remastered version of The Albatross that May. They spent most of 2014 on the road, supporting bands like Sea Haven and The Hotelier, as well as tours with Brand New and Modern Baseball, as Blake said earlier. In 2015, they toured in support of Me Without You, and The Albatross was released in the UK. Their second album, Dealer, which we were kind of talking about earlier, was released that fall on Triple Crown and reached number 3 on the Billboard Vinyl Albums chart. A thing we'll get into a little later that I find really interesting is that Foxing's albums sell really well physically on vinyl, which...
Do you think that's an album art thing? or just like their demo is just the exact, the exact window of people who listen to vinyl a lot now. Guys like us,
it's the latter, but like... Dealer hit 3 and Near My God hit number 2 on the vinyl charts. And I have no reasoning for that. I just find it interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they got good placement at Rotate This too. I would guarantee it.
Yeah. Right on that front shelf. They spent much of 2016 also on the road, including an incident where their van was stolen. And they also were involved in a car accident with a semi truck, I believe. And in 2017, founding member Josh Cole left the band to pursue a career in filmmaking, which I actually think was kind of a cool move. If you've ever watched their music video for the song Glass Coughs off of Dealer, it's an 11-minute short film, basically, and it's amazing. And Josh Cole directed it, so I hope that he does cool stuff with film in the future. So heading into making Nearer My God, the band said that they set out to make this record bigger and more bombastic than anything they'd done before. And what better way to make your album bigger than anything you've done before than hiring Chris Walla to co-produce it?
Oh.
Chris Walla obviously has come up 30 times on this show, yeah. I guess.
Columbia House Party Hall of Famer, Chris Walla.
Connor Murphy told Stereo Gum, "We tried to bite off more than we could chew on everything. We knew that's what we were doing, and we wanted this to be bigger than we were capable of, especially when we knew that Chris was going to be involved with it." Chris Walla actually, and the band's relationship began after their car accident. Walla reached out to the band to offer his professional or personal help afterwards. And these conversations eventually turned into the band recording a cover of Dido's White Flag with Chris Walla, with the intention of income being used to repair the van. But right after the election of the shithead in the White House, or I guess no longer in the White House, hopefully when this comes out, the band donated all the extra proceeds from that single to Planned Parenthood and the ACLU. Over the next little bit, the band and Walla kept in touch and started sending him their rough sketches of the songs that would eventually become Nearer My God. Chris Walla said that this was a massive sorting process through the sketches provided to him, but also something so beautiful and heartbreaking that I couldn't articulate it exactly. Eric Hudson co-produced the record with Chris Walla and told Stereo Gum that the band loves each other, but are always at war in terms of differing opinion and tastes. And Connor Murphy credits Walla for getting the band to a place where one hard thing that we've gotten completely used to only on this record is trusting each other and respecting each other's opinions on things. One of the ways that the band incorporated some of their wilder ideas that were helped to be reined in by Chris Walla was on the song Bastardizer with its bagpipes.
Love a bagpipe.
I love a bag. Apparently so does Connor Murphy and the rest of the band, not so much.
Oh, come on. You think a guy with the last name Murphy is not going to like some bagpipes? What are you? You never been to a Nucci funeral before? Come
genetically on. Predisposed to like it. This song was inspired by a joke about a Vampire Weekend song that doesn't feature bagpipes. Murphy also can't remember what the joke was, but he insisted on there being bagpipes in this song, so much so that when the band objected to the idea, he offered to pay out of pocket if the song didn't make the final cut of the record. They went and found a great Highland bagpiper in St. Louis who specialized in funerals, but then they found out that bagpipes can only play in one key, and it was not the key that this song was in. Chris Wallace said of this whole discussion, "I don't think I threw anything, but I definitely yelled a couple of times. We traded more text messages about how to best capture the bagpipes and deliver them than any other element on the record." Which, that's kind of the whole point of that, but I just think it's funny that bagpipes caused such a stir on a very good song, too.
Yeah, I mean, also, it's bagpipes on one song. Like, let's... It's not like he was like, let's make a bagpipe core album.
I mean, let's wait. Who knows what the next one will be?
Yeah. Don't let him near Steve at all. The weird non-music stuff those guys will be coming up with. I guess not non-music, but just the, hey, this is what our band is. Let's play something completely that doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, Steve's next album will be bagpipe heavy. Notice I said Steve and not Pup.
Yes.
So the tone of this record and the title obviously come from the song Nearer My God to Thee, which is famously the song that the band on the Titanic was playing as the ship went down. The album was also inspired by an unearthed Doomsday video recorded by Ted Turner in the 80s to be played on CNN while the world was ending. It's also scored to the same song. At some point in the writing of the album, Murphy found this video and used it as his muse for writing the record, leaning into the apocalyptic feeling of the song, the video, and just being alive in 2017 and 2018 in general. He told DIY Mag, "I went to the band and told them we should use this kind of imagery in the lyrics, song names or video or something. It's this insane real-life nightmare that Ted Turner put together. It's one of the scariest things I've ever seen." The band, although at first didn't actually notice that they were writing these songs with a common theme until about halfway through recording, when they started seeing the songs taking shape and realized that that was sort of the general feel of the record. And Murphy also points out that it's hard to not write things that have an apocalyptic feel when it feels like we're at the end of the world all the time. He also says the band felt the same way about their career in the band as they did about the state of the world throughout the recording process, saying, "We felt many times during the making of this record that we weren't going to be a band anymore, that this was the end of our careers. It was us at the end of making music in general. We gave up at different points of the record. Some of us felt like we gave up on our lives, like we couldn't find that lust for life anymore." Which, like, sounds really dark, but also I do think is pretty consistent with the overall feel of this record. And I think it's kind of cool that they drew from so many different apocalyptic places and personal places to make this record. Because I know one of the, I don't know if criticism is the right word, but one of the things I know some people didn't like about this record was it was much less personal feeling than some of their earlier work, when in fact it's just sort of more obliquely personal.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, you know, you think, oh, an emo band or this kind of songwriting in general. And I think a lot of people default to like the love relationship aspect of angst and anxiety and stuff like that. And I think that this is still a very, very anxious record. It's just, you know, more, this is me gesturing broadly at the world around us right now. this is an album for 2021. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely it is. And maybe not exactly in the way they intended it to be, but it certainly applies to today. Despite everything you just said, they didn't set out to make this a particularly political record, so to speak, because as Murphy told DIY Mag, "We're dummies. We're not politically savvy people. We don't have any real solutions to offer. So rather than writing a record where we're speaking specifically about what is happening in the world, we realize the best way to channel all that is to speak about what it feels like to live in a time like this." And while this DIY Mag article singles out the lead single Slapstick as playing into these themes, specifically the frivolity of existence, to me, the song that best exemplifies these feelings is the first song I heard from this record, and the one that got me really excited for it, and that is Game Shark. Gainers from the balcony, swan dive into the concrete. They served you venison and morphine, and I'll thank you for your good deeds. It's in the 12 steps, it's a death threat. It's like a seatbelt against a hurricane. You're in the first class, it gets a death spin. With a disorganic twin, a guy in the car.
Jake, I have a question for you about Game Shark.
Do it.
Is that song titled after, like, the actual Game Shark you would plug into your Sega Genesis to get the codes?
Yes.
Amazing.
It is. As I had said, I was kind of waiting for, like, their new one because I was really excited for what it could be. And then I heard this and I was like, where are my sad boys? But then I was like, wait, this song fucking rules. And yes. I'm into it.
Also, let's just be clear that while I understand the desire to use Game Shark, having like a thing you could hook up to your game that auto inserted the cheat codes feels like bullshit to me. Like, you got to hunt for up, up, down, down, or at the very least, like once you got to PlayStation era, like you got to look that stuff up on the internet. I feel like there was no, you, obviously, if you're using cheat codes, you're cheating. But I feel like at least if you have to work for it by finding it somewhere and not just having it automatically fired up. Anyway, it rubs me wrong.
You still have to put the codes in, I think.
No, you just like left it hooked up to your box.
To your point about cheating, that's actually why this song is called Game Shark. As it's a line of cheat cartridges, the title is an allusion to cheating, death, and the devil. So at first I thought they just named it that as like that was their working title. Because they're like nerds. Yeah. And then I found that out yesterday. I was like, oh, that's funnier.
Cool. That's big Bill and Ted vibes.
It's extremely.
Outsmarting the devil, finding games you can beat the devil at.
So obviously this song is much more experimental than their previous work. And that came up a lot in sort of the pre-release press for this album, especially in an article written by Stephen Hyden for Uproxx, where he and Connor Murphy kind of try to compare and align Foxing with another band we've talked about, which is that band Radiohead. In this interview, Murphy compared the Albatross to Pablo Honey, Dealer to the Bends, and Nearer My God's OK Computer before clarifying this is no OK Computer. That thing is what? Like one of the top five greatest records of all time? But for us, that's what Nearer My God feels like. We're realizing what this band actually could sound like, where we can jump off and maybe make something like a Kid A or maybe a Hail to the Thief. And props to Connor Murphy for recognizing that Hail the Thief kicks ass. Eric Hudson also sort of doubled down on these claims about their potential as a band, saying that they intentionally made this as complicated as humanly possible. Hudson is sort of, as Hyden says, Hudson is the Johnny Greenwood to Connor Murphy's Tom York, if we're sticking with the Radiohead analogy. Hudson writes a lot of the music and co-produced this record, as I said, with Chris Walla. He quit his job to focus on writing this album full-time, and the writing process for Nearer My God consisted of Hudson going to his basement every day to write down ideas, then piece those ideas together into songs, and then he showed those to the rest of the band. And those ideas obviously didn't always stay the same, like the title track, which we heard off the top of the episode, which started as basically a straightforward rock song before morphing into what it sort of eventually became, which Stephen Hyden compared to M83 and the 1975, which I don't know, but sure. Sorry, that was Ian Cohen compared that, but still, I don't know. Hudson said that it was really a writing process through demoing. With some of these songs, we haven't actually played them together live yet, even now. And that was set around the time of release of the record. They were also motivated to write a record that they might not be able to play live. Because as Stephen Hyden pointed out, the band was actually getting tired of people coming up to them at shows and telling them how much better they were live than on record. So they decided to kind of fuck with that a little bit. And this experimentation was met with support, but trepidation from the band's label. As Connor Murphy told Vice, Fred Feldman, who runs Triple Crown, is somewhere in this Target. I guess he was being interviewed in a Target. He's not standing next to me right now or anything, but the amount of support he gave us on this thing was insane. We could tell all along the process that there was a lot of it that he didn't really like when it came to what we were showing him with demos. He would say things like, look, I know you're not going to listen to me anyway, but I'm nervous about the direction you're going here in terms of people who like your band. That's a scary thing to hear, but we just buckled down and said we're going for it. These are the songs we want to write. If we're trying to cater to anyone other than ourselves here, this is going to be a half-assed record, a record full of half measures. And we wanted to go all the way with this because we'd already put so much time into it. And one of the songs that probably exemplifies this the best in terms of being intentionally obtuse, or at least hard to replicate live, is the incredibly layered song Heartbeats.
And they really nail these soundtracky track opens. Eh?
Yeah, they're very cinematic.
Got to be honest, I thought you were leading us into Five Cups with the way you teed up that last part there.
That was sort of, I'm about to talk about Five Cups, but that was those were the two songs that I do think are representative of, like, let's make the most ridiculous stuff we can and the most obtuse and difficult songs we can produce. Murphy said of Heartbeats that song is actually made up of way too many parts to actually capture live. That being said, there's still an energy to that song that can be even better live. The chorus is this cool kind of floating thing on record, but live we realize, oh, this can be a really powerful rock thing and kind of different than what it sounds like on record. To your point about Five Cups, one of the major influences to this record that at first I thought was surprising, but then thinking about sort of late 2010s emo is maybe not that surprising, was Frank Ocean's Blonde. Blonde came out in the summer of 2016, which was right in the middle of Foxing's tour and when they were starting to write this record, and it was played consistently in their van. Eric Hudson said that the way he wrote songs, he didn't necessarily care about conventional pop structure or four-on-the-floor beats. It was someone really pushing himself and really spilling his heart out for everyone. So they tried to incorporate some of the ideas that they heard in Frank Ocean's music, although not always to a point that worked for them, although they have said it did sort of open their minds about where they could go. This is where I was going with Five Cups, which is a 9-minute song that I think kind of makes up the center of the record, if that makes sense, because it's kind of in the middle of it.
Yeah, for sure.
That song originally included trap beats. Eric Hudson said, Five Cups at one point veered into hip hop with trap beats and booming bass lines. We listened back to it and we were like, this is too much. This doesn't make any sense. We'd be appropriating trap culture, and that's not only inappropriate musically, but also sonically. Sorry, this is Connor Murphy, not Eric Hudson. He said, it's a culture and a genre that's so far removed from us who sit in our basement and play D&D. We truly have no business doing that. And then regarding sort of what I was alluding to earlier about the lyrics and the personal stuff, Murphy said that we're very paranoid and fearful people. Rather than writing about love and relationships on this record, we focused a lot more on the anxiety and paranoia and control and fear that the world's going to end. That's what we thought about more than anything on this record, mostly because we were reading the news every day. And I guess the only truly, I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it, the deepest personal connection, I guess, that Murphy drew from for the lyrics on this record was his Catholic upbringing. And he said to Vice regarding that, "I was raised Catholic and then turned my back pretty fucking hard on it. But being raised in Catholic school, that stuff never leaves you even if you don't believe in it. It really is ingrained in you. Nothing feels as scary to me as revelations or biblical references because they were the horror stories I was told as a child. Where, you know, what hell is like and what the end of the world will be like, what sin is and where it gets you. So when it comes to telling a scary story, I think the biggest influence I have is that stuff, the Bible, because it's the scariest book in the world to me. So the idea of heaven and all of that, it's kind of the breath of fresh air every once in a while, like, oh, at least then they throw you this bone. If you do the right thing, it works out. It's good. I mean, my personal belief is that heaven and hell are states of mind, but being shot caller at the gates of it is kind of like seeing happiness right in front of you and being stopped by something, especially yourself." And the song that he is referring to is the song responsible for the opening lyrics today for us and the first track on the record that is the most directly referencing his Catholic upbringing. And that is also the song that Mike Shinoda remixed for their remix EP, and that is Grand Paradise. I can be romantic when I'm starving for sleep. I try, but I can't seem to remember anything. We'll hear from a dog. I've got a fistful of its mane. It's too coarse to stomach, so I shove it down my throat. Look, left, bleed, Saturday. Jesus Christ, I'm wrapped too badly. Watch me sleeping in the kennel again. I can't recall the bark of the bay I am in. If I was listening, I could hear you. The shot caught at the gates of heaven.
So, Jake, I have a lot of thoughts on this song.
Do it.
The first is that a guy named Murphy writing a song this good about his Catholic upbringing with an opening lyric like that is just chef's kiss. You had talked about Five Cups a little bit, and I kind of wish they kept the trap beats on there because I feel like a 9-minute epic that also has a 9-minute epic emo song that also has trap beats is like a band's best attempt to get both of us on board.
That's true. Maybe you'd be a bigger fan of this record if they had kept it on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a fan of the record, just not to the degree you are. And, you know, I just want a little peep sprinkled in there, you know. My other thought is that I really like Shinoda's mix of it.
Yeah, me too. I didn't really know what to expect from it because, like, I'm not a huge Fort Minor guy. But, yeah, I quite like it.
Well, Jake, I'll give you 100% reason to remember the name Fort Minor. They are, anyway, I'm not going anywhere else with that joke. I can't make that joke 2 episodes in a row. Okay, so Jake, that is, what did we get through? We got through a bunch of songs that kind of, I think, give people the idea of where they were coming from, especially the interplay between Murphy and Hudson in writing these songs and what went into a lot of kind of setting this anxious but not relational anxiety tone to this album. And I think, you know, you can, whereas maybe that makes the album a little tougher to pull out individual songs than some other bands in this genre or emo songs in general, I do feel like it makes it so that you can really like sit in this album, if that makes sense. You can kind of, not that I'm saying fetishize the angst or soak in it or anything, but I do really think you can kind of turn this on and sink into it a little bit, and if that makes sense in any way.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, Jake, we're going to talk about how other people received this album, as well as the aftermath for Foxing, some of the bands in their sphere that we wanted to mention, and all that other stuff that comes in our last segment after this. All right, Jake, so you were obviously, that's the big note here, is that Nearer My God was, what was it, number one or number two on Jake Goldsby's Best of 2018?
Number one, baby.
Number one. That's, you know, we're going to go into how this album was received and how it did commercially, but that's the big honor. The number it's one true. On Jake Goldsby's year end.
And I think, I can't remember now, but I think I had it at number three on my decade list.
Damn. I think. That's, I mean, I guess I had Phoebe just as high, although we did a Phoebe album that is it wasn't on that list, obviously, because it didn't exist yet when we did that episode. But that's good. It certainly makes some sense that when we did a best of the decade list, that we'd start checking off some of the albums on that list on this podcast.
The thing is, it's fun to talk about music you like.
Yeah. Jake, what did other people think of this album? How was it received?
According to Metacritic, Nearer My God was received with, quote, universal acclaim. It has an 82 rating on Metacritic. It received an A- from the AV Club, 9 out of 10 from Drowned in Sound, 7 out of 10 from Exclaim, 8 out of 10 from Line of Best Fit, and an 8.0 from Pitchfork, although the Best New Music title eluded it. Writing for Pitchfork, Ian Cohen, in his review, said the title track could go moonshot for moonshot with M83 in the 1975. He also said, Nearer My God is likewise a closed system bound with melodic and lyrical leitmotifs, but designed more like a multimedia extravaganza. It's an album of complicated, often elusive views on the illusion of control, an apocalypse that always feels impending, but never arrives. And for Exclaim, Beth Bowles said, while Foxing haven't totally abandoned their previous post-punk roots, Nearer My God clings tight to experimental synth rock. This album has the kind of confusion we associate with Radiohead. Sometimes it's rock, sometimes it's punk, sometimes it's just noise. And in terms of chart performance, as I said earlier, it peaked at number 2 on the US vinyl chart. Number 4 on the Top Tastemakers album chart, number 7 on the Independent albums chart, and number 4 on the Heat Seekers albums chart. All of those albums, all of those charts are Billboard charts. And then post Nearer My God, the band obviously went back on tour to tour the album. I missed them at their Lee's Palace show here, but did see them at the Mod Club RIP. I think in April of 2019, I don't remember, but it was a very good show, even though it was way too short. And then this past September, Ricky Sampson left the band, leaving Murphy, Hudson, and Helwig as the only current official members. They do have 3 touring members with them. In his farewell post, Sampson said, hey, this is Ricky. After 9 years, I'm finally ready to make some new life moves. With the recent pandemic, it's shown some light on where my current priorities lie. I love my bandmates and I love touring, but it's time for me to move on and start a new chapter of my life. I've been going to school and finally accepting stability into my life. Big love to my bandmates and their new album coming soon. Big love to all the friends I've made throughout a lifetime of touring. And finally, thank you to everyone who's supported us through these years. See you all on the other side. And speaking of that new album, the band is either done where they are currently working on their 4th album. I know Andy Hull from Manchester Orchestra is involved. And from the one song from it that I heard on YouTube of a live video, pre-COVID, obviously, it's going to be real fucking good. And I'm real excited for it. And I hope it comes out soon.
Yeah, can't wait. So, Jake, what I'm curious about is, I guess I have 2 questions to kind of wrap this up for you before we get into the song ranking and picking one for the mixtape. The first is that we joke a lot about this, but what would you, like, if you were trying to explain Foxing to someone, what would you classify them as? Because I feel like they're one of the most difficult bands that we've done to put into a genre.
Yeah.
Like, I would say emo, but, like, I saw them in prepping for this. I saw them get indie, post-rock, math-rock. I don't think math rock applies, at least not to Nearer My God.
I definitely wouldn't call them math rock. I feel like The Albatross is definitely an emo record, like a post-punk emo record, I would call the first record.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, even the second one a little bit. And I don't know what I would call Nearer My God, to be honest. I'm sure our emo has thoughts, but I generally pigeonhole them into emo just because it's easiest, but I really don't. Indie emo, I guess.
Yeah, sure.
Experimental
anyway,
emo?
Anyway, we don't need to get... I was just wondering if you had a good answer. My other question, Jake, is do you have a good sense of why maybe Foxing doesn't hit for me as much as bands in their sphere like The World is a Beautiful Place and The Hotelier? Because I can't really figure it out.
I wonder if part of it, and I'm only speaking for me because I know there's many bands and that we've talked about both on this show and just between the two of us, sort of in the new emo genre that hit for you that don't hit for me. And oftentimes I find it's because of the vocals. And I wonder if that's it for you, just because I think Connor Murphy's an incredible vocalist, but he isn't what I would call your standard new emo vocalist.
Yeah, that's
fair.
That
makes sense. But I don't know why they... I don't know what, but you're also not like a big Radiohead guy either.
Yeah. I mean, again, they're a like passive fandom. Like,
yeah.
Like I appreciate the music and I know it's good, but it's not something I sit with.
Exactly.
A whole lot.
And I wonder if just because that like experimental side of them, not that you don't like experimental music, but I wonder if
you call me a musical prude, Jake.
But I will say I would have thought that you would have been really into The Albatross. That feels like a Blake record to me.
Maybe I'll go back to it and listen to it some more. Maybe the Radiohead comparisons, they need to show up on an episode of a show and say, we're that band, Foxing, in a fake British accent. All right, Jake, it's now time to pick out our favorite songs from this album with the purpose of selecting one for our mixtape. I don't know. I mean, we got to a bunch of them in the episode. I'm going to give you my top three. I have it Grand Paradise, Bastardizer, Heartbeats as my three favorites. So I was happy with your picks. I think I'd have Five Cups next. But yeah, where are you at?
I don't know. I go back and forth on my favorite song in this album a lot, as you tend to do with your favorites. I think Game Shark is probably my favorite, even though it's not the one I listen to the most, just because it is kind of so out there and unexpected. I also really like Heartbeats. I think Heartbeats is an amazing song. And I really like a song we didn't talk about today called Won't Drown, because I think it's got a really cool sort of R&B influence to it that maybe that's where the Frank Ocean influence
ended
up.
I was going to say,
yeah. But yeah, I would say those are in some order, those are probably my three.
Okay.
But on any given day, you could also talk me into Lambert or Grand Paradise or the title track as well.
All right. Well, what are we going to throw on the old mixtape then, Jake?
I say let's go Heartbeats. It was on both pretty high for both of us. We both like it. And it's a good song.
You will have no arguments here. The weekly me typing into your headphones, Heartbeats. Heads to the mixtape. All right. At this point in the podcast, first, we want to thank producer Dylan for all his great work. This is maybe one of the cleaner episodes. So only a 3/4 thank you for you this week, Dylan. There's no nonsense, no John Cullen derailing us, no Steve derailing us, nothing. But thank you to producer Dylan. We'd also like to thank one of our Patreon supporters, Eric Hartman, a.k.a. Ricky Hart. He's supported for a long time, both on social and on Patreon, as well as actually, I don't think he's in the Discord, but he does offer feedback via text on the podcast where he can. So shout out to Eric. Shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. You can join them on Patreon and in the Discord at patreon.com/Columbia House Party. Failing that, please give us the old rate or review and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. And if you're not already subscribed, either welcome or what are you doing only occasionally listening and not subscribing and helping our numbers? You jerk. All right. I just want to say, Jake, you did a great job. This is a fun episode, and I thought you did a wonderful job in the A chair leading us through it.
Thanks, man. I'm tired now.
Yeah. Well, the next recording, you can just sit back, you know?
It's true.
Yeah, this is the benefit of doing two at a time is one, I don't have to talk. One, you don't have to talk. It's great.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah, we found a good pattern here. who knew that After a year of recording remotely, we figure it out. All right. This has been episode number 63. As we transition to episode number 64, we're not going to give away exactly what makes up the arc yet, but a familiar arc is coming back for the second time. I talked a little bit about the bands that Foxing orbits that I really like. Bands like The Hotelier and Me Without You. And I mentioned that way back in 2014, after the release of The Albatross, Foxing was touring and opening for a couple of those bands, actually, bouncing around. I think they opened for The Hotelier, Me Without You, and next week's band, all as they were coming up. It's fitting, then, that Foxing are from the city with the best fans in baseball, Jake. Because next week...
Oh, I hate you.
Because next week, Modern Baseball.
Try the fish.